Call this Ag Committee to order. Senator Vickerman. Senate File 1972.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1972 is a bill that is very simple, and I will say a little bit about it, then Quinn Cheney will jump in and help a little bit with the agricultural part. But what we want is a report on the use of federal money on biomass establishments. We're building those and having those all over, and we just kind of want a report. So I've asked Quinn Cheney if she can just say a few words.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Quinn Cheney. I'm the Policy Director at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I've talked to Senator Vickerman about this bill, and we certainly will be monitoring the money that might be coming in from both the Farm Bill and the stimulus package. I'm not aware of any money right at the moment coming in on biomass-related issues, but we certainly will be happy to share any information that we have coming forward to the committee. My only concern that I expressed to Senator Vickerman was that we have a lot of reports going to that particular division. And so I just, I'm a little bit concerned at the, we'd be happy to provide a very brief report to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and
Senator Vickerman.
Members of the committee, I also share the concern that reports cost money, whether they're one page or fancy report or... So if this bill moves from here, I want it to go to finance, and then we'll figure out how we can handle the situation.
Well, then we'd get the department's final answer on how much it would cost and whatnot. They'd tell us their assumptions on how lengthy it would need to be. Any questions for members? Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it was a short time ago we had Senator Bach here with regards to... to a study or a plan that was going to go on up in his district on the reservation up there. Is that what we're talking about here? That would be included in this kind of a study?
Senator Ingebrigtsen, the way I interpret this bill is that it would just cover the, we would be reporting on the types of projects that we are doing that would use federal money from the Farm Bill.
Oh, just federal. Thank you.
Senator Vickerman, any thoughts?
Any other questions of members? No further discussion. I would move the bill, and it has to go to finance because it's
Is there anyone from the audience who cares to comment either in favor or in opposition to Senate File 1972? Seeing none, Senator Vickerman moves Senate File 1972 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Thank you.
And I'll just call up Senator Clark and turn it back over to our normal chair.
Normal chair?
Normal chair.
There's nothing normal about our chair.
So that makes you...
He's awake.
Most people won't admit it.
Oh.
Abnormal.
We got some folks from my district.
You could have got her.
Proud to be one of them.
I think you could have got her started. He's chatting.
Oh.
You can do it. Senator Clark, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, from an unusual seat. Mr. Chair, I think we've got two different bills in front of you. Are we doing 1794?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, we do have what we think might be a fairly easy oral amendment, and I apologize to Mr. Bodden, I didn't get a chance to talk to him about this, but there is multiple places in this bill that it refers to basic active duty, and if, like, for example, 1.11, Colonel Alness informs me that we probably, technically, we really should be changing basic to base. And I'm wondering if we could do an amendment, Mr. Chair, that wherever the word basic is before active, replace it with the word base.
Mr.
I think
Chairman.
We've identified them all. If you want us to go through it, that be easier?
Senator Carney.
I'd move that oral amendment, if that'd be okay with the chair.
Senator Moore, Senator Coring moves the oral amendment.
And is, Mr. Chairman, is that the change? Everything that says members' basic active duty to base active duty?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, it's Senator Coring.
On the Coring
and
amendment.
We could go through those places if you want us to, but it's about seven or eight of them. So I guess you could have counsel.
Counsel, can you?
Mr. Chairman and members, I just think we should be careful to catch each reference to basic, and it would read base active duty military salary. I think that's the way it is throughout the bill. I see that change on page 1, line 11, page 1, line 14, page 1, line 21. And I'm working my way through the bill here. I don't know, Senator Clark, if you had...
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bodden, on line 2.1, base should be right in front of rate, which is the first word of the line, and then base should be in front of military. Further on that line, in front of, and then on line 2.7, in between daily and rates, it should say daily base rates. And then, is this our last one? 2.9. Insert base between daily and rate. Again, it's the underlined section. Mr. Chair, that way we'll kind of clean up the statute while we're
Senator
hopefully
Corn,
clarifying.
You want to put that into your...
Yeah. Base. Would that be on
210
Mr.
Chair,
as well?
Do we need it on 210 as well?
I believe so.
Mr.
Daily.
Chairman, that refers to the school district salary.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
That's referring to the school district salary.
Any further discussion on Senator Coring's motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Clark.
Hey, Mr. Chair. I'm bringing forward this bill because a constituent of mine, Major Bradley Hughes, brought it to our attention. He happens to be a teacher at Tech High School. He's a member of the Red Bulls. And he has spoken with Guard colleagues who are also educators, and he found that the law in differential pay was being applied differently across the state. Some different districts are paying the differential while others are interpreting the law differently. And obviously, I think this committee and the body had a particular way they were hoping it was going to get interpreted. So what the bill does, it clarifies the provision in current law that requires public school districts to pay a salary differential to certain employees who are ordered in active duty service. The current law requires the school district to pay the eligible member of the National Guard or other reserve component the difference between the member's basic active duty, base active military duty salary, and the salary the member would be paid as an active school district employee. Under current law, the payment may only be made to a person whose basic or base active duty military salary is less than the salary the person would be paid as a school district employee. The clarification made in this bill changes the eligibility requirements so that a person whose daily rate of active duty pay is less than the person's daily rate of pay as a school district employee is made eligible. And I am confident that Colonel Allness can actually say that in a clearer way than I just did, but that is what the bill does. So, Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I'd like to have Colonel Allness just say a few words on this particular bill.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs, and actually, the Senator said it quite well. What this does is just create a level playing field so that all service members are treated in an equitable way and treated in a fair way so that there's no question about how they should be compensated so that the impact of the deployment is not made worse by how this pay differential is handled by the school district and everyone's handled in the same manner. If any questions, that completes my testimony.
Senator Gobley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Colonel Allness or Senator Clark. Well, suppose that a school district has an employee who is deployed who also is carrying on an extra function for which they're reimbursed, say, $1,000 more. You know, does it cover just the base pay as I don't know what all these additions of the base or based mean, but, you know, does it cover, you know, a special activity? Say they're, you know, a basketball coach or something and they get deployed, during that season. Does that cover that portion of their income as well, or is it just for the, you know, base pay that the teacher draws?
It does cover the extra service too. I just can't find it right now.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I can't find the citation in there, but it does say it in there somewhere that if they do have an additional work, like they're a coach and they receive extra salary, that would be figured into the base pay, so that would be figured into their pay as a school teacher when they do the compilation.
Okay. Thank you.
Lieutenant Council.
You can find that on, I believe that's on page 2, beginning on line 4, where it says the school district employee must, the salary must include the salary the member earns from the school district for co-curricular activities. That's on line 2.6.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Members, bear with us. We have... No, we haven't moved your bill yet, have we?
No. Mr. Chair, we need somebody to, because I unfortunately cannot.
You know, Mr. Chair,
Senator Laurie.
Before we do that, though, I'm just reading where the member's salary is described beginning on line 2.4, but then what's being compared is the daily base rate is being compared to the person's daily rate of pay as the school district employee. Maybe we should compare it to the salary. So since we've just defined salary to include that stuff in order to be consistent, if that's the goal of it, I think that...
Mr. Chair and Senator Laurie, I think that if we're working to clarify this, that would probably make it clearer.
So if we just defined the member's salary beginning on lines 2.4, so on page 2, line 10, the person's salary instead of daily rate of pay as an active school district employee.
Mr. Chair, that sounds like a very good amendment.
Senator Laurie, you want to make that as an amendment?
I would move that as an amendment.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Laurie, I think the part of the concern here is to get a comparison of the daily rate of pay, and I'm not, maybe your amendment includes that, but it needs to be computed on a daily basis for this to work.
It's only money.
Maybe you could, there could be language to...
The person's daily rate of pay calculated against the salary? I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm overdoing this. Maybe cause confusion.
Mr. Chancellor, Laurie, because it doesn't actually define the daily rate of pay, that makes sense to me that we'd want to at least connect
that we'd want to refer back to the salary.
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Byron's got a... suggestion?
Mr. Chairman, I think for the time being, what might work, it's perhaps a shorthand, but you could, on page 2, line 10, where it says the person's daily rate of pay, you could delete pay where it appears there and insert salary, the daily rate of salary. It looks like Senator Clark has a suggestion.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Senator Laurie, Colonel Allison and I were just looking. If we look at lines 2.2, I think we've actually, the law addresses it because it starts out by saying, and the member's daily rate of pay for the member's school district salary calculated by. So I think line 2.2 actually does state out what the daily rate of pay is.
Good, good.
So I think we actually could leave it the way we had it at first.
Yes.
Because it goes on to say the member's salary as a school district employee must include the basic salary and the additional salary they'd earn through.
Yep.
Every now and then we find
there we
that,
go.
That
so we did. Somebody did this work before us. That's good.
It's good that we don't have to reinvent it.
There, Laurie, does that work for you?
I withdraw my amendment.
Mr. Chair, I think if somebody would move the bill.
Any further discussion?
Happy to move the bill.
Senator Laurie moves it. Senator File.
My bill.
1794 be recommended to pass. It goes straight to the floor. Any more discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. No members. What we're going to do is we're going to adjourn for just to change the tape and switch to a different. So everybody stay right where you are and pick up the next bill. We adjourn. Committee's adjourned. Then we'll be ready.
We're doing a division and a...
We can do policy and now finance.
Yeah. Now, the Senate Agriculture and Vegetable Committee will come to order. We'll start right off with the, Senator Stump. Is he here? Okay. We'll do Senator Clark's in as long as she's down here.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark, your bill is veteran status designation and driver's license and identification cards. And let's hear what it's about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe that we have an amendment on this that is written as opposed to not. You have that one? Do you
yes.
have that one?
Senator.
Just got to explain it.
I tell you what, Senator Clark, I'm going to ask Senate Counsel to explain the A1 amendment, and then we'll act on it.
And Mr. Chairman, this I believe this comes from the department, but what this basically does, if you look on page 2 at the bottom of the page there, this inserts the definition of veteran that's provided in statute. Gets rid of the definition that was supplied in the bill, and that's something that's used throughout the statute. It's probably a little easier for the department to work with.
And Mr. Chair, the department is just telling me that it really needs to go 33 through 36, not 33 and 34. On page 3. Lines 3.3 through 3.6.
Senate
Counsel.
Mr. Chairman, you might want to ask Ms. Keel exactly what the department has in mind here. I suppose if the applicant meets the definition of veteran as determined by the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, then that language that appears on page 3, lines 3 through 6 would not be necessary.
Mr. Chair and Senate Counsel, that's exactly correct. If by adopting the definition of veteran, the areas that we are deleting in the bill are already encompassed in that definition.
So, Mr. Chairman, then in addition to the language you see on the amendment, Senator Clark could incorporate the instruction to delete on page 3, lines 3 to 6, I believe.
Understand it, Senator Clark?
Should I ask?
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, or somebody, could you explain to me whether or not by deleting this language, going with this other definition, does that mean that people that fought on our side in the Army of Vietnam or some other allied nation, does that mean that if they're living in this country now, they cannot get this designation veteran on their driver's license?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, according to federal code, which is encompassed in also our state definition, there is a list of 33 allied groups that from other countries that have fought that we qualify. And there, of that list of 33, they would also be able to put this on their license, the definition of veteran.
So, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Keel, is that list in this section with 197.447, where veteran is defined, are those nations listed there?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, they're not listed, number 1 through 33, but they cite the U.S. code, which if you look at the U.S. code, it does list them there. So it just gives the code of the U.S. code, federal code.
Senator Rope, would you like to move that amendment?
So moved. Two amendments.
And Senator Rolfe's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you know, many of us have been working on veterans reintegration issues, thinking about how we can be doing a better job, not just supporting folks while they're offshore, but when they come back. They come back with many skills and many positive experiences that can help us and strengthen our communities. We also know that we are looking for ways that we aren't just saying welcome home, and then that's it. And so this particular bill came about as an idea from one of our longtime St. Cloud police officers, who himself is a veteran, John Justin. He was retired Army, military police, 21 and a half years of active duty service. And he said, look, why don't we look at a couple of positive things we could do? We know, right now, the only designation we have on our driver's license is if we're organ donors, which makes sense. But we could accomplish a couple of particular goals by having an optional veteran's status listed on our driver's license. What he was seeing, one of the goals that we've been working on with law enforcement, is that as men and women have been coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and we certainly have seen this from people who were in Vietnam or in other combat areas, is that there may be things that come up that if a law enforcement person knew about, that they would enter the situation differently. So let's say there's a domestic violence situation going on. If they know the person's a veteran, they're probably going to approach a little bit differently. Or think about the situation in Alexandria, that if the law enforcement folks had known that they were coming into a situation where it was somebody who had recently come back from overseas, they might have approached the situation differently that resulted in a shootout. I mean, if we could have some ways that we can have, not because we want to hold people accountable, but we also want to make sure that we're aware of the situations that people may have faced. And this is not time limited, because I have another constituent who's a Vietnam veteran who said, you know, 30 years later, I woke up one day and the things that I hadn't been living with, all of a sudden I was living with. So that's one thing. So from a public safety standpoint, we're thinking from a law enforcement and perspective, we could have that. We also are very proud of our veterans. We have a totally different era, as many of you know who served in Vietnam. We want to be making sure that we are being welcoming, that we are thanking people for what they have done. And the other thought that we've had with this is that if there's provision on the driver's license, then that if somebody's applying for a mortgage or if they're doing something else, somebody may say, hey, we actually have some veteran services you may not be aware of. Or somebody might simply be able to say, thank you. I want to thank you for your service. And right now, that's something that's a pretty big thing that doesn't cost any of us any extra money. So from a law enforcement standpoint, if it was an officer coming into a situation, they would be able to pull it up in their vehicle. But again, it also would be on the driver's license. And I think that might be all that I have right now. I will tell you, it's an opt-in box. It's purely optional. I'm concerned that there's been a fiscal amount on this. We believe that the department, that the next time they change their form, that they could accommodate this and it shouldn't have an extra cost. So that's something that we've been trying to work out. But I would got two wonderful people here that could speak to this as well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Colonel Eric Allen, Department of Military Affairs. Just to cover a few points here to emphasize the strength of this program. First of all, as was stated, this is an opt-in program, which is really good because we're not forcing people. We're not identifying people who don't want to be identified, just allowing those who want to have this designation placed on their license to have it put there. So we're not in any way labeling people or making in any way a negative connotation. Also, it's not a declaration. This is very important, and it's important, as Senator Clark mentioned, it opens a gateway. It's a gateway for other benefits and other services that a veteran may otherwise not know that's available, and that's very important. And I think as submitted by two from the constituent who is in law enforcement, it just emphasizes once again our commitment to partnering with law enforcement, and this is not used to escape punishment or accountability for their actions. Rather, everything we do as we go through our reintegration and conduct training with law enforcement, it's about holding the veterans accountable. But sometimes to do that, you might want to approach your situation a little bit differently, and this really enables them to do it. Even in the very first phase, it'll get loaded on the computer. So as the police conduct a stop, they'll know if that person, or at least the registered owner of the vehicle, is a veteran. And then from the very beginning, they can start things out the right way. Additionally, it starts a process for accountability and greater understanding of the behavior for law enforcement from the very beginning. So if this has to go into the judicial system, they know that there might be alternative sentencing or different counseling that could be used as alternative sentencing with the wrong probation in case they don't complete that, so they can be held accountable for that behavior. But maybe sending them off to jail wouldn't be the right answer. So from the very beginning, they know what they're dealing with and can address it in a proper manner. And then as all the other things that Senator Clark mentioned, we're committed to working with the other executive agencies and with the governor's office to moving beyond this first step of getting on there to how can we pass it off to other agencies with the permission of the veteran so it can be used more appropriately to let them know of other benefits and feature and help that's available for the veterans. This completes my testimony. Thank you.
Any further discussion? No. Senator Ropes moves that Senate File 1014 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now, Senator Stump.
Chairman, you just stepped off for a minute.
Mr. Chair, when he left, he said Senator Tomasoni could go ahead of him.
Senator Tomasoni, come up to the... Come on up.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 1987 is a post-deployment health assessments bill for our Guard members who are coming back from active military service and once when they've been deployed outside the state. And the issue here is about making sure that their mental health is being taken care of after they've come back from active duty. We've had some instances where the health assessments have gone forward for, is it up to 6 months? 90 days. And afterwards, there aren't any health assessments. And people have been falling through the cracks and bad things have been happening. And what this does is it allows the health assessments to continue for up to a year. And I have a couple of witnesses here who can give you guys better idea of what this is all about.
Let's hear from our two witnesses.
Mr. Chair, members, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Just here to lend the support from the department on this bill. We've been partnering very closely with the County Veterans Service Office, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and other state agencies on our efforts with reintegration and health assessments. You know, the 90 days, 30, 60, 90 days is a great program, but some of the returning veterans are still experiencing their honeymoon phase at that point, so they're not displaying some of the issues that might show up later. So this really gives us another great opportunity to get a look at them, and as the general says, to look them in the eyes, you know, at 6 months and then at around a year. And that's when we're starting to see some of the problems show. We've been already in discussion with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and we feel pretty confident that they'll be lending their expertise. We already have counselors embedded in some of the armories so that when the Guard members are on their weekend drills, they have the opportunity to talk to healthcare professionals if they are experiencing issues. We want to extend that out as well up to 2 years. So we're already pushing this forward. I think we have a great partnership in place with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm hopeful that this won't cost any more money to do, and I think it's the right thing to do.
Senator Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Tomasoni, and I think you have one sentence here that needs just a little bit of clarification. 1.8, it says, there must be health assessments approximately 6 months and 1 year after the end of the member's deployment. It's possible that somebody could interpret that 6 months and 1 year as a total of 18 months, is at the 18-month mark. So I would just suggest maybe we say something like there must be health assessments at approximately 6 months and at 1 year. That's the intent of the bill, isn't it?
We have a suggested amendment. Just you caught that. That's very good. These freshmen read the bills. I have two words to add. Okay, one is on 1.1 on 1.9 after and add not later than. And then also on 1.6, after health and before assessments, add and wellness. So if you could move those for me, Senator Erickson, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I'd toss one more word out there to Senator Tomasoni on 1.6, when you're talking about the post-deployment health assessments. And I think perhaps the health and wellness might cover it, but I was wondering if we should include the word comprehensive.
Comprehensive health and wellness assessments. All right, throw that in there too. Before health.
Honest, do you have anything to add to that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, so the Department of Military Affairs absolutely agrees to this. When we started the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program and we did the 30, 60, 90 days, that was not meant to be the end point. That was a starting point. And when we did that a couple years ago and got it passed actually into federal legislation, that was a benchmark program. But we need to move beyond that. We recognize that to help veterans make it all the way home, it takes longer than 90 days. So we welcome this. We welcome the increase in language because we're not just looking at just one part. We're looking at the people holistically. And we intend as part of this to do educational counseling, employment counseling, health, mental health, fitness type counseling to help the veterans reach the point where they can be fully successful in their career. And by doing this, that helps us accomplish that end. And we welcome the partnership of the other state agencies by saying comprehensive that holds them all accountable to help us out with that mission.
Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to understand this, they're deployed. Obviously, they're turned over to the federal government when they're deployed. Are they the ones paying for this assessment? Or am I getting this confused? Would they not be the ones doing the actual paying of this? Or?
Mr. Chair, Senator, while they're on active duty, Title 10, it's all paid by active duty. When they come back to the state, they will go on a different federal status, Title 32 working force. It's our intent that we would do this as part of their drill. And so they'll be coming in and we'll do this part of their drill training so that way we're not creating a large extra expense for all these soldiers and so forth. Now, the state agencies that come in and partner with us or the Department of Veterans Affairs from the federal side, those embedded providers, there's all costs associated with that. But we're trying to figure out how can we minimize that or eliminate that extra cost by shifting around at this point. But the intent is not to bring them in another time, but as they come in on a monthly basis, address it. And then for the other people, the active duty who have left, they're always welcome to come to our existing training or if they just stop into one of our drill training, if there's someone there, we'll link them up with the people at the unit and serve them as well.
On the ropes amendment, does everybody understand what Senator?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, just one other little question. This is related to the Adjutant General calling on other agencies, and there's a list of people there. It does say other appropriate sources, but since this is a health and wellness assessment, you know, I think it might be good to have something in there that says health professionals or something along there instead of other in order to come up with, or is it just in the administering of the program and you wouldn't need necessarily a health professional administering the program? But that makes me wonder about who would be administering it, and if it's not a health professional, how can they be, you know, doing the health assessment?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yeah, we spent a lot of time kind of talking around it. Sometimes we listed three or four agencies, and other times we took them out. And what we really look at is doing an assessment, a survey that identifies it, and those are a lot of times done by social workers or by other qualified personnel, not necessarily health professionals. But if there's identifiable behaviors, at that point then we do immediate referral or we'll do an escorted referral to someone if they're in a crisis. But the idea is that there's not enough of those medical health providers. Now, we certainly welcome them in, but they're not always available to assist on the ground at that part. So it's mostly going to be using identifying through checklists and surveys to identify possible behaviors that would need further medical assistance.
On the ropes amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I could, when I read line the 1.8 up to 1.9 that we changed, there must be health assessments approximately 6 months and not later than 1 year after the end of a member's deployment. It could be interpreted to just be one health assessment. So could we say there must be two health assessments, comma, one approximately 6 months and another not later than a year after the end of the member's deployment?
I'm going to ask Senate Counsel to repeat what we should be doing.
Mr. Chairman, I think it might be sufficient if you say there must be separate health assessments.
Oh.
Approximately 6 months and not later than 1 year. I think that would accomplish it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, from our perspective, we see these soldiers every month, and if there's an issue with a soldier that looks like they're in trouble, we'll pull them right off the floor then and give them a referral. And it's our hope that we could do just one assessment in that time period. The reason is that we're seeing them every month already, and we don't want to create it that it's a drill, that they're just continually filling in paperwork and going through assessments, assuming that there's something wrong with them. We want to be there to help identify if there's trouble and be there for them, but we don't want to create trouble either. I mean, if you go off, it's kind of a difference if you ask up, what's wrong with you, as opposed to how are you doing? And so we want to keep it in a positive mode where we can identify issues, but we don't want to be going back every single month with, or in this case, within a six-month period, two times and doing two assessments.
Mr. Chair, so when you first described the bill, I thought that we were trying to get two assessments. We're not. We're trying to get one assessment.
Mr. Chair, Senator, in fact, in the original draft, it was two, and the oral amendment made it so it would be one. That was the intent.
That was the intent.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair and members, you know, as Colonel Olness said, there's the opportunity to do these health assessments on a regular basis. So there might be more than one health assessment. As Colonel Olness said, we see them on a regular basis, and it's as needed. So I don't know that there's a requirement that there must be two specific ones given. There might be more than two that are provided throughout the time frame.
Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I just thought that I thought it was one also. But I can see why some think it's two. And I'm not sure the words we've got in there really clarify it that clearly, but I'm willing to go ahead and let's do what we said we were going to do, and then we can adjust it again later if it still doesn't sound quite right.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd go to Senate Counsel again, because I thought we were talking about two, one at 6 months and one at a year. Or if it's the 6 month that is just reviewed again at 1 year, and then we want to make sure we're not painting ourselves into a corner with just a limit of two, it could be more. So are we talking about at least two, or at least two time periods where they're assessed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ropes, what we're talking about is between the time period of 6 months after they return and before a year, we must do at least one formal health assessment. But in that time frame, there could be the opportunity, and there might be more than that one health assessment if required, if needed.
Mr. Chairman, maybe what you could do here is make the sentence read, there must be at least one health assessment between approximately 6 months and not later than 1 year at the end of a member's deployment. If that sounds okay, then I'd also like to restate the rest of the amendment, because it's been a while since Senator Harrison Ropes offered it, just to make sure we have it right. On page 1, line 6, after post-deployment, insert comprehensive, and after health, insert and wellness. And then on page 1, line 8, after B, insert at least one, and delete assessments and insert assessment between. And then on page 1, line 9, after the first or after and, insert not later than. I think that would take care of it.
Got it. No.
Everybody understand it?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Ropes, you renew yes. your...
I renew my new motion.
This is... You should do these
all in favor, say aye.
I'm pretty sharp a lot here.
On the motion, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. So adopted. Now, I think the bill is ready to move.
I'll move the bill, finance. Sir, as amended.
I'll tell you what we're going to do with the bill, Senator. We're going to, I'd like to lay it over for possible inclusion in an ominous bill, if that's okay.
That works, Mr.
We've
Chairman.
We've got work to do here yet before we're done, so that would be the motion.
Ominous.
Senator Ropes.
I move Senate File 1987 as amended be passed and held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Everybody understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Thank you,
go
Mr.
Adopt.
Chair.
One last bill, member, Senator Stump. Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about.
Nothing going.
Business.
Leroy. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment. It's the A1 amendment that changes the bill a little bit. And
Mr. Chairman, I would move the A1 amendment for my good friend, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A1 amendment reduces the $100,000 to $50,000 and in each of the next 2 years. And Mr. Clavin will address that in just a minute. We were not able to get some of the seed producers to come down. As you know, there's a storm in northwestern Minnesota, so the roads and the travel isn't very friendly. But it is in particular, Roseau County is a major producer of grass seeds and one of the probably one of the leading counties in the not only in the state but in the whole nation. And they have been, and we've had a significant industry up there in grass seed production. So this bill addresses some of the needs for the Turf Seed Council and some of the research and that industry needs. And I would ask for your support.
Senator Coring, you moved the A1 amendment?
Yep, I renew my motion.
Senator Coring moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in order that Senator Stump would like to have it.
You bet.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? You adopted. Now your bill should be in order.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Langseth?
Mr. Chair, I have an oral amendment. I guess the Senate Council is going to explain it. We had a situation where it was put in law that grass seed had to be purchased within 25 miles of where it's planted. And as Senator Stump mentions, most of our grass is planted almost in Canada. And most places that need the grass aren't within 25 miles. So what this would do is simply eliminate that in law. And I believe Senator Chaudhry's committee had quite a bit of testimony that indicated that 25-mile thing made no difference as far as the quality of the seed and so on. So I would make that motion, and the council can explain the wording of it.
Mr. Chairman, what Senator Langseth wants to do is to add a new Section 2 to this, repealer. And would just say Minnesota Statute Section 84.02 is repealed. I didn't know if you wanted an effective date on that.
On enactment.
On enactment, or you could go back to the original law if you wanted. On enactment. And then some, Mr. Chairman, it would also have an effective date, colon, this section is effective the day following final enactment.
Okay. I move the Senator Stump, I guess.
Senator Stump, do you understand that?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, yes. The testimony in Senator Chaudhry's committee was fairly extensive that the prairie grasses that are required for native seed, the 25 miles has no genetic scientific basis whatsoever, and the NRCS, which is the federal wildlife programs, use an area of 200 miles, and so it's quite a bit different. What this would do would be allow the grass seed industry in northern Minnesota to participate in all of those projects that are in the bonding bill and flood mitigation projects and other wildlife conservation projects across the state.
Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me who the qualified third party might be that you subcontract under this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Bruce Clavin. Today I'm representing Minnesota's Turf Seed Council. Can answer your question, Senator Engelbretson. This is a collaborative project with the University of Minnesota, North Dakota State University, and AURI out of Crookston. And they're all kind of working on this together, and they have plots in 10 locations. I was going to cover that in my testimony, but to answer your question, it's those entities.
So follow up, then there would be no seed industry here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Engelbretson, there is some partnering with the private seed industry. I don't believe they have a checkoff like we see in corn and soybeans and wheat, but there are private companies that are working with the growers on this.
On the Langstaff Amendment, we have a correction or not?
No.
Senator Chaudhry.
Just to add, Mr. Chair, that the contents of this amendment passed the Environment Policy Committee.
Twice,
excuse me.
Beyond the Langstaff Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Now we're into the bill. Any further discussion? Senator Coring, I believe you moved the bill, didn't you?
Mr. Chairman, I just moved the A1 amendment for Senator Stump, but I'd be more than happy to move the bill as amended for my good friend Senator Stump.
Senator Coring moves that Senate File 448 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in an ominous bill. Does everybody understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Members, we are adjourned.
Bring this down to $25,000 each.